Welcome back to Hawk Off the Press. My name is Madison Erzik. I am the current Iowa football beat reporter for the Gazette, and we have the former football reporter for the Gazette joining us. He now covers Wisconsin. Welcome back to the podcast, John Steppy. How's it feel to be on the other side of things now?
It's a lot different. Like, I'm hearing that music and I'm not the one doing the intro. Like, that's, yeah. I'm excited to see this side of the StreamYard screen.
There you go. Exactly. Well, and you're live from Chicago too, at Big Ten basketball media days as well. So all the things are happening for you at the moment. Since you started out in Milwaukee, but welcome back. We get to talk Iowa football. It feels like it's probably only been like 3 weeks since the last time you talked about Iowa.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been almost exactly that since Iowa-Wisconsin volleyball. So now Iowa-Wisconsin football, you know, always a matchup I enjoy, you know, having been in Iowa for as long as I was. You know, this was a matchup that I had circled on my calendar, regardless of all the interesting football matchup things. You know, this is a fun one for sure for me to cover this weekend.
Yeah, and it's very quickly become a very interesting, very difficult to predict matchup. And I think that's what you and I will probably spend a lot of time talking about today. And so we'll jump right into it. But I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts on Wisconsin's game at Michigan last weekend. What did you see? The Badgers had a halftime lead against the Wolverines on the road, which is not an easy thing to do at the Loud House. So I'm just curious, you know, based off of initial impressions, I know a lot of fans were kind of like, oh, that might be a blowout. But what did you see out of that Wisconsin-Michigan game?
Yeah, they were more competitive was the biggest takeaway I had, where, you know, that Maryland game was bad in terms of you don't really expect Wisconsin to be losing by 17 points to Maryland, but it was especially bad considering it never really was all that competitive. Here against Michigan, they put together a really solid opening drive. I think it was something like 15 plays for 75 yards or somewhere along there, give or take a couple of plays and a couple of yards. But having that really strong opening drive was an encouraging sign. It was with they've been kind of constantly retooling this offensive line. And this latest iteration had that really strong first drive with Davis Heinsohn at center. He was the starting left tackle in week one. Gets benched from that. They've gone through some injury issues at center with Jake Renfro being out, which if you would have told me, or if you have asked me in fall camp, okay, who's the one guy that you really don't want to get hurt on the offense outside of the quarterback position? Because that's the obvious answer, as we both have known from this season. I would have said Jake Renfro at center because they didn't have a lot of depth there. They're having snapping issues with some of their second and third team centers. But they lose Renfro. They eventually decide to move Davis Heinsohn over. That worked out well in that first drive. And then the offense really wasn't the same since. So this was a team where defense really kept them in it for as long as they did before Michigan just broke away in the third quarter. It was, you know, it wasn't really a game anymore after, you know, a certain point in that third quarter. It's quite clear that Michigan was going to run away with it. But there is a competitive first half, so that was an improvement. But still, you know, we're talking in relative terms here for a team that, again, lost by 17 points to Maryland before the bye week, and it wasn't necessarily as close as it looked on the scoreboard either. You know, they had that one touchdown at the end that was basically in garbage time, which is why it was 27-10 instead of 27-3. So you look at it, and Hunter Simmons at quarterback was interesting with that Michigan game. I think that pretty much surprised everybody. So he was a Southern Illinois transfer, somebody that was kind of another guy to compete in the quarterback room, but I think pretty much everybody felt pretty strongly out of fall camp that Billy Edwards, obviously injured, but he would be your number one quarterback, and you would have said pretty confidently that Danny O'Neill is winning that backup quarterback competition in fall camp. But Danny O'Neill has had some struggles, a San Diego State transfer, second-year guy, started right away for the Aztecs last year. So he's had some struggles. So they're on to their third string quarterback. Luke Fickell did not give an update on Edwards' health, but if Edwards is not available, he suggested that Simmons would be the guy again, that he's getting more opportunities again this week. Danny O'Neill still getting opportunities. And that's another interesting thing, too, that we've seen is he hasn't been afraid to play two different quarterbacks in the same game or even the same drive. So we'll see what exactly that quarterback usage looks like this week against Iowa.
Yeah, it's very interesting seeing both teams balance quarterback issues of their own right now with Mark Gronowski's status for the Hawkeyes still kind of being a little TBD. It does, the way Ferentz made it sound during his weekly press conference on Tuesday was that it's not long term. He's been able to practice since Monday. He was medically cleared to practice on Monday. It's a matter of, is he going to be confident? Ferentz mentioned part of the reason that Gronowski didn't go back into the game against Indiana was that Gronowski didn't feel like he could decelerate, which when you think about it, that seems like a very like common thing to be like, yeah, no, that makes sense. But then you like, you think about it in game two, when your adrenaline's that high, you're like, wait, no, if you can't slow down, that actually makes a lot of sense why that would be a problem. But he didn't participate in any bye week practices. Meanwhile, you had Hank Brown and Jeremy Heklinski taking both of those snaps, and they took a lot of snaps at quarterback during the bye week. Tim Lester said just on Tuesday alone last week, they ran, I think he said about 56 plays. It was well over 50 plays in that practice. So you're looking at 25 to 28 snaps per player in a practice period. That's a lot. And I don't think that Iowa's doing that unless they have to prepare their two backup quarterbacks. And it makes this whole thing very interesting because now both teams, both offensively and defensively, are having to prepare for a very big question mark on who is actually going to be throwing and handing off the ball. And so from your perspective, Steffi, how have you seen Wisconsin try to make those adjustments? Because sometimes it's in-game and it's instant. Other times you have things like a bye week and practice to be able to work things out. But that's still a pretty decent shift in the offense.
Yeah, and that was the nice thing that they had with making the switch to Hunter Simmons is even though they were competing even after the bye week, there were a lot of opportunities for Hunter Simmons to, you know, get maybe a little more extra work than he would have otherwise gotten with that bye week. And then with him and Danny both getting opportunities going into that Michigan game. And then they decided, I think it was that Thursday, was when they told them that Hunter was going to be the starter and Danny was still going to get opportunities. But you look at the numbers from that game, and it was pretty much all Hunter. Danny, I think, had maybe three snaps or something like that and no passing attempts. So, you know, a good time of year if you're going to make that change. And, you know, that's what Iowa is now kind of running into a week later. It's really interesting. There are a lot of parallels in this matchup, and this, count that in the long list of those parallels. The other interesting thing with all of this is Wisconsin defensively, their secondary has been maybe a little bit of a rough spot for them through some of these games. You look at what Malik Washington did for Maryland. Obviously, you expect Alabama to do well against Wisconsin, but quite how well they did against Wisconsin's secondary was also a reason for concern. So whichever Iowa quarterback it is, there could be potentially some opportunities with this secondary. It's interesting, the best quarterback, I would say, out of fall camp, you know, from the 15 practices before the season that we're able to watch here, I would have said is Nysir Forkerin, who has not been able to play while he's in a eligibility court case or court battle with the NCAA. So, and that's kind of a wild card where we still don't know when that gets resolved. If that gets resolved, he really needs a preliminary injunction to go his way in order to play this season. So if you're looking for one thing that could totally change the matchup on a Friday afternoon, that would be the one. But as things stand right now, it'll be interesting to see whether it's Brown, whether it's Heklinski, whether it's Gronowski, what that matchup exactly looks like against this Wisconsin secondary that has had some issues and has had some injuries there as well with Preston Zachman. Probably one of their best, if not their best, defensive back, somebody that's been really good at safety. So, so many things with the passing game on both sides that'll make this a interesting one to watch, to say the least.
Yeah, well, not just with the passing game, also the run game as well. Specifically, these two teams run defense. Wisconsin's got one of the best run defenses in the country. I believe they're only second to Iowa, last I checked, in the national standings, or they're flipped. They're 1-2 in the Big Ten, and they're 1-2 how they stand nationally as well. They're all both in that top 10 range. I mean, it's impressive to see how Wisconsin's been able to consistently stop the run or slow down the run against a lot of these teams. How have you seen that become kind of the staple, maybe this team's identity, while they've been dealing with a lot of these offensive question marks?
Yeah, that probably identity is really the great word for it, because when a lot of other things have not gone well for this Wisconsin team, the rush defense has been kind of that one consistent-ish silver lining. You know, Michigan had some success against them. So I don't remember exactly off the top of my head what the number is after Michigan, but it was a lot better before Michigan. But still, it's been a strength for them. And really the interesting thing going into this matchup is it really seems like that game last year where they gave up 42 points to Iowa was kind of the wake-up call that they needed to be more physical up front. They needed to be bigger up front. And what you're going to see in terms of that kind of front four that you'll be seeing on Saturday at Camp Randall is a lot different than what we saw last year at Kinnick in a game that was just a total annihilation. So that has been, if you're looking for one positive out of this 2-3 Wisconsin team right now, you would say it's the rush defense. And on the flip side, it'll be interesting, you know, how they can establish the rushing game offensively when that's been a challenge with this inexperienced offensive line. And obviously, as we both know, you know, Iowa has a tendency to put out some really good defensive lines, and this year appears to be no different from what I've been able to see this year. So you look at it, and that could be tough sledding potentially for both teams this week.
Yeah, well, I just pulled up the numbers as well. So through the games on October 4th, so post-bye week for Iowa, post-Michigan for Wisconsin, Iowa's number 4 in the country in rushing defense, allowing 69.4 yards. Wisconsin's 6, with 75 flat allowed this season. Michigan, ironically enough, 7, with 77 allowed yards. So you're not far off on that on your guess there. But no, it is so interesting to see how Wisconsin's kind of their identity really has been that rush defense. It really has been one of the best in the country this year. It's allowed, although they haven't been on the flip side of a lot of these bigger games, particularly in the Big Ten, it's been interesting to see how they've been able to kind of stall some of these teams that are historically very rush heavy, like a Michigan post JJ McCarthy era. I did want to ask though, since you have been on the flip side, the Iowa side of that massive win for Iowa, you know, we've since learned what Wisconsin's done. They say 42 Iowa. They've been doing push-ups. It was talked about at Big Ten Media Day for football in August. How have you seen this Wisconsin team really kind of get excited, get amped up, and understand the gravity and how much they want to avenge that loss that happened in Kinnick last season?
Yeah, the Iowa 42 is a really big deal in spring ball, as I've been told since I was obviously on the Iowa beat at that point. So I was on your side of the screen at that point. But you look at it, and it's clear that this is a game that maybe got under their skin a little bit in terms of, you know, I remember seeing it, you know, from the Iowa beat writer side last year, and somebody who grew up in, you know, the state of Wisconsin thinking, this doesn't look like Wisconsin. And I think a lot of people there realize, too, that that's really not what Wisconsin football is supposed to be. And losing to your rival by such a dominating fashion was, and obviously it helped that Iowa had Caleb Johnson, who had obviously a tremendous season. But that still was a little bit of that sign of, okay, things have to change. And that's certainly one that, you know, I think the quotes made its way around everywhere in terms of what they're saying with, you know, giving up 42 points to Iowa. Now you look at the numbers, and Iowa's offense was pretty good in some other games too, in the first year, Tim Lester. But yeah, no, this is definitely one that Wisconsin has had circled, you know, on their kind of metaphorical calendar for a long time. And certainly one they'd like to have back. They haven't had the bowl since 2021, my first year on the Gazette Iowa beat. So it's been a minute since, you know, Wisconsin's been successful in this rivalry. That they did quite well in the 2010s. And that's maybe symbolic of kind of the current status of things at Wisconsin, where I think it was 6 Big Ten title games they appeared in the 2010s. And in the 2020s with Luke Fickell, it's been much more of a challenge in terms of establishing that identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of the Heartland Trophy, that's gone. That's not in the operations building. At least it wasn't there when we were there on Tuesday. The players did say, though, when we spoke to a couple of them, they said it was in the weight room at one point, just like an ominous reminder, almost, was kind of how it was described to us. So yeah, that's been completely removed from the facility. So that's getting ready. That's traditional. It gets locked in a little cage like we do every other big game trophy out there. This is exciting for me, though, because aside from the Cy-Hawk game, this is going to be my first like Big Ten trophy game that I get to cover. So for me, like I feel like this is kind of exciting because it's a whole another level of Big Ten football that, you know, you don't really see unless you're kind of in it or you know the history, and having to learn the history of the conference and of Iowa as I've been going throughout the season. This one's fun. I'm enjoying learning the history of the trophy and seeing all the fun things that they do and stuff like that. It makes it enjoyable this week.
Yeah, you know, I think the kind of old Big Ten West schools really do have some great trophies. Yeah, the fact that Wisconsin and Iowa play for a brass bowl. You know, you got the pig between Iowa and Minnesota. That was always a fun one for me to cover. You know, Wisconsin, Minnesota has the axe. So you look at that kind of that triangle of rivals there in the upper Midwest, and it really is some great tradition kind of all around with some of these games. You know, a lot of fun to cover. You know, obviously you're going to have one team being quite happy to, you know, hoist that trophy in the corner of Camp Randall. And yeah, so those have always been ones that I've enjoyed covering. This one, especially for me personally, you know, currently covering one team and formerly covering another team. It might be one of the few games where I feel like I have more knowledge of the opposing team than the current team that I'm covering. So on a lot of levels, for fans, for media, this is certainly a lot of fun to cover.
Yeah, I had a little bit of that feeling against Indiana, just having the knowledge of Kurt Cignetti that I had pre-Indiana him and a lot of the players that came up from James Madison. So I understand that feeling too. It just makes it fun. But I'm curious, you know, when you look at the grand scheme of the Big Ten, this is something that is jumping out to everybody. You look at the Big Ten standings, Wisconsin hasn't found a way to win a Big Ten game yet. Rutgers hasn't found a way to win a Big Ten game yet. And then you look and you see Penn State also has not won a Big Ten game yet. Being around this conference as much as you have been, what are you seeing out of the scope of this conference at this point? Everyone's played two to three games at this point in this league. What have you seen that kind of is just making it feel like this conference feels a little different than maybe it would have been about 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think when you've added the West Coast schools, you know, you are seeing, and I think it's more than just that. You know, I think the Big Ten has been at a position of strength for a while. And I think it's a reminder of how difficult it is to build a sustained winner. And maybe it's a little easy to take for granted some of the results that Iowa has had consistently. Obviously, you know, an 8-win season sometimes feels better than other times. But there are a lot of programs that have historically been at very high points that right now would really crave 8 wins. You know, I think if you told any Wisconsin fan right now that, like, would you take an 8-win season right now? I think they'd take that in a heartbeat after last year's 5 wins. You know, this year 2-3 with another 7 games to go and really hard 7 to go to. So I think it's a reminder of A, the strength of the Big Ten, and B, just how hard it is to consistently win. And I think when you look back at, you know, Kurt Ferentz breaking the record that we all knew was going to happen. You know, I was doing the math last year, kind of in November. Okay. Well, even before November. Okay, you know, how many more, which game is it going to be next year? But, you know, I think that puts that record in perspective when, you know, you surpass 205 wins in this conference. You know, that's going to be a really hard record to break, because you're seeing even somebody like James Franklin, that is probably considered in that upper tier of college coaches, you know, having the issues that he's been having this year, you know, it's hard to win.
not only is it hard to win, it's hard to manage the schedules too. And you kind of touched on it, but Iowa is the start of a gauntlet for Minnesota, not Minnesota, excuse me, for Wisconsin. I have my own schedule flipped for with your schedule right now. but it is the start of an absolute gauntlet. And I mean, Wisconsin's facing the reigning national champions, Ohio State. They're going to have Oregon at one point in the near future. How important is it for this Badgers team, this Badgers fan base, to be able to try and get a win against Iowa, knowing that you've got so many very competitive, very difficult teams, and not only teams, but places. They have to go to a lot of these teams too. And just kind of putting that in perspective as well.
Yeah, you look at, and this whole season has really been a gauntlet in terms of they've already gone to Alabama. They've already gone to Michigan. So, you know, you look at those venues and you know, with the 110,000, whatever, at the Big House, you know, you look at it and you're playing already some really tough games. You know, Maryland has turned out to be a better team than anybody has thought. So that even is a harder game than somebody would have said back in, you know, August and July. So you look at it and this is, you know, I haven't come up with my score prediction yet. I'm probably picking Iowa. But, you know, even with me saying that, this is probably one of the most kind of quote-unquote winnable games left on Wisconsin's schedule. Because, you know, you've got ranked teams with, let's see, Ohio State, Oregon, I believe Illinois is still ranked, Indiana. So you look at it and you have four ranked teams there of your seven remaining games. And then you're looking at it and you've got Iowa, you've got Washington, you've got Minnesota. So, and Washington obviously has shown some promise as well. So if you don't win this game, it's a really good question in terms of when that next win comes, because your most winnable game truly on the schedule is Minnesota. But if you don't get a win before that, if you're going into that game at 2-9, on, you know, a 9-game losing streak, that's gonna be a tough moment for the program. So yeah, if you don't win this one, you know, the opportunities become really difficult and you're gonna have to knock off a ranked team, which this Wisconsin team really hasn't shown the explosiveness offensively to be able to really, you know, give a lot of respect in terms of their abilities to make an upset. You know, they need to be more explosive in these games that they're not favored to win. I don't think they had any rushes for more than 20 yards, and I don't think they had any more passes for 30 yards against Michigan. And I think they only had one against Maryland. And I think that was right away at the beginning. So they need to be more explosive offensively. They need to force more turnovers. The last turnover they forced, I believe, was against Middle Tennessee in week two. So you look at it and, you know, this is a team that if you don't show these things against Iowa, the road gets a lot more difficult further ahead.
Yeah. And you know that Iowa is going to be looking for an opportunity, even their season turnover margin, they're minus one right now. With that minus one coming against Indiana, you know, just the last game that the Hawkeyes played in. So the turnover margin specifically, it is smaller for Iowa in maybe years past. Not even maybe, it's definitely smaller than in years past. But that is something that's going to be so key, because these are two teams where there is so much question and uncertainty surrounding the offense that it almost feels like the two defenses are really going to be how this story unfolds on Saturday night. That's how I've kind of viewed this matchup, especially with some of the injury developments we've been getting. We're not sure who's going to be the starting quarterback. You know, Iowa's likely going to be having to deal with, well, this will be Kamari Milton's second start at running back, most likely, but they won't have Desmond Patterson. They won't have TJ Washington at running back. So the running back room looks entirely different. We still don't know the full status on Reese Vanderzee exactly just yet. So there's so many questions, and you're dealing with so many questions as well that I don't know if you agree completely, but I really do think it's going to come down to the defensive turnover margin, truly.
Yeah, I think this really has the makings of kind of a classic Iowa-Wisconsin grinded-out defensive game, where I said half-jokingly, and only half-jokingly, first team to 14 wins to somebody. So you look at it and this, you know, it's going to be a, whichever team, you know, makes that big turnover that, you know, sets up the other team in great field position. It could be one of those where one or two of those games or one of two of those plays can impact the game. Or, you know, on the flip side, if, you know, Karnowski, Brown, or Heklinski makes, you know, a couple big plays against this Wisconsin secondary, it could turn out a lot of different ways, but there are certainly a lot of signs where it would not surprise me if this is kind of that grinded out, low scoring battle of two really good defenses. But we'll see. It'll be, you know, neither team is really at full strength right now, which, you know, that's, to use a Kurt Ferentz phrase from before, that's football, you know.
That's football.
Injuries happen. So, yeah, that has stuck with me since my time over there. But you look at it and, you know, this will be a, you know, you could potentially have somebody that's a third string quarterback for Wisconsin, you know, going into the season, and who knows who your Iowa quarterback is. So yeah, it could be some ugly but beautiful football all at the same time.
Yeah. And you mentioned it earlier, you're leaning towards probably picking Iowa if you had to pick a team. I'm curious, is there reasoning behind that you have? Is it just kind of a gut feeling? What do you feel like Iowa has the edge over Wisconsin right now, you know, a couple days before this matchup?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting picking this game because, you know, there is just that familiarity with the team on the other sideline in the other press conference. So I would say I think Wisconsin on the offensive, a lot of the air, you know, you have a lot of these stylistic similarities between Iowa and Wisconsin, but a lot of them you would say, okay, I would rather, you know, would you rather have Wisconsin's offensive line right now or Iowa's offensive line? Okay, I would rather have Iowa's. You look at it, and even with the injury situation that Iowa has, I'd probably rank Iowa's quarterback room ahead of Wisconsin's. So I think they just have a lot of matchups at those different positions. You know, obviously, Kurt Ferentz has a way of winning close, ugly games. And that's certainly a factor. You know, I've covered enough of those to, you know, be wary of picking against him in those types of matchups. You know, Wisconsin drew a little bit of ire from a lot of fans with the way that they used or didn't use their timeouts at the end against Michigan. So I think there are a lot of, you know, special teams. I would say Iowa probably has the advantage. Wisconsin has made some very nice special teams plays. You know, you think back to Vinny Anthony's big play against Alabama. You think back to one of the punts that's down to, I think, the 2 yard line against Michigan. But, you know, the consistency of Iowa's special teams units is something that, you know, can be an impact maker, or, you know, a difference maker in some of these games. You think back to, you know, for Iowa, you know, 2024 in Nebraska, how much, you know, one big special teams play really flipped that game in a way where Nebraska is probably outplaying them in some of the other, you know, facets of the game. So I think there are a lot of those little things that, you know, maybe don't sound like a huge monumental factor for why I currently think, and I've gotten some slack for this, but, you know, even in the preseason, I saw this as a game that I picked Iowa over Wisconsin for. You know, so I think a lot of those things, they might sound little, but they can really add up. And I think that probably gives Iowa the advantage, but we'll see. You know, this is one that Wisconsin has circled on their calendar. So certainly not, you know, writing off the Badgers by any means. But yeah, right now going with Iowa.
Yeah.
And not well, just because I'm on an Iowa podcast.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned like the details and everything like that, because Iowa's defense has been so ademant on fixing details. That was pretty much everything that they talked about during their weekly availability post Indiana, watching film, seeing what Wisconsin does. They had talked a ton about focusing on the details with the one-on-one matchups that they might get against the Badgers and things like that. So I really do agree with you in that sense. Those details, those one-on-one matchups, where Iowa lines up with some of the Wisconsin players, And where the injuries line up and how that might affect things. I can understand that as well too. And I think that makes it a lot more fun. But at the same time, I don't think you can really count out when someone's just really motivated to beat you. I think there's something about the human psyche that just makes it so hard to go up against somebody who is that determined. And Wisconsin feels like they are that determined right now.
Yeah, well, they were flat out embarrassed last year, you know, to put it simply. Right. Like, that was a game that you would expect them to at least, you know, you probably would have, you know, somebody can look back at my Gazette pick-ems from last year and actually see what I predicted. I assume I predicted Iowa to win that, and I assume I probably predicted a somewhat close game would be my guess from that. That was a long time ago, but you know, you expect Wisconsin to at least be competitive in some of those games, and that's been one of the big knocks of this Luke Fickell era, is how many of these losses that Wisconsin hasn't really even been competitive in. You know, they really weren't competitive against Alabama. They really weren't competitive against Maryland. They were competitive in that first drive against Michigan, but then, you know, things kind of slid there. So you look at it and yeah, you know, that was a game that is going to stick with you when you lose like that to your rival, a rival that, you know, you have that trophy with, that, you know, there isn't a ton of love lost for. So, yeah, you know, it makes for certainly some added motivation in case, you know, the fact that this is one of the few winnable games, in case that wasn't motivation enough, you know, this certainly adds to it. And adds maybe another flavor to what's already a really great Big Ten rivalry.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a fun one for sure. Last question for you before you can head back and dive back into the world of Wisconsin basketball, because I know that's what you're in Chicago to do. But you mentioned that these kinds of games are always competitive. It's always, you made the joke earlier, you know, it's probably going to be the first team to score two touchdowns. What exactly do both of these teams need to do to be competitive against their respective opponent this week?
I would, for Wisconsin, I'd point to two things. One thing is you need to force a turnover. You know, the fact that they've had three interceptions this year, and I think it was two in week one against Miami of Ohio, one against Middle Tennessee, and none in the last three games. You know, so they need to be able to, defense needs to make some plays to make up for where this offense has come up short. And this offense, as hard as this is to do against the Phil Parker defense, as I've certainly gotten to know over the last 4 years, they need to have a couple big plays where, you know, if your way of scoring is on these long grinded out drives, that really doesn't help you. You know, you saw that against Michigan where, okay, Wisconsin was kind of taking what Michigan was giving them toward the end when they put together a field goal drive, but they lost like 6 minutes off the clock when, you know, with a big deficit, that's hard to do. So I think, you know, having some kind of explosive option or explosive capability shown is a key. You know, these are things that are going to be keys for the next seven games, but I think especially, you know, this week, I would say for Iowa, Caden Weechen, you know, what can he do on special teams? You know, how can Iowa kind of take advantage of, you know, how fundamentally sound they are, is probably an advantage in this week's matchup. And how can they kind of take advantage of that and kind of turn that into points, whether that be a big special teams play, whether that be kind of other fundamentally sound things. I think that's one thing that I'd be watching for from Iowa. And you know, can whichever quarterback that they play, you know, can they make Wisconsin secondary, you know, make some mistakes, which has happened in these last few games. But they've also been going up against quarterbacks with a little more experience than not that Malik Washington has a ton of experience as a true freshman starter. So maybe experience isn't the right word for it. But, you know, these last few quarterbacks have, you know, made Wisconsin pay for some mistakes in the secondary. And if Iowa can do that, I think that path to victory, you know, gets a lot easier. You know, we've been talking about how few rushing yards allowed per game. Part of that too is it helps when teams can just beat you over the air. So You know, if Iowa can maybe exploit that, that would really be a big key, I think, on Saturday night in Camp Randall.
Yeah. All right, John. Well, thank you for making another appearance on this podcast. I know you've got plethora on my side of things, so thank you for being on the opposite this week. We appreciate having you back. I'm sure there are a lot of Hawkeye fans that are more than happy to hear your voice and potentially see your byline in the Milwaukee paper now that you're getting to cover some Wisconsin.
Yes, always a pleasure. You know, it was really a fantastic 4 years on the beat. So, you know, many fond memories. A lot of, you know, friendships that have, you know, transcended state lines. So always happy to be back on the airwaves in the state of Iowa and helping out the Gazette, which obviously had a tremendous role in terms of my own career here and getting to this point. So really greatly appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. And if you guys like this content and want to see more, Hawk Off the Press comes out every single week. And there's also a newsletter that comes out every Friday morning that you can sign up for free. Thank you so much for watching. You guys have a great rest of the day. We'll talk more later.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed. Be empowered. Subscribe to The Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.